The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
It obviously begs the question, why exactly are we borrowing in a currency that we print ourselves? I'm waiting for someone to stand up and say, why do we borrow our own currency in the first place?
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets, some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money.
This is fine.
So a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to I guess I can't really talk. I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. It's like the government clearly prints money. It does it all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation.
Fucking lose it.
So, I don't think there's anything confusing there.
This is a protest, but fires have been started.
Rich, entitled nepo babies.
How are you, baby? How old are you?
I don't know.
People should not be walking around with masks.
Russian disinformation.
Stewards.
That was a clip from a documentary called Finding the Money, and it explores the theory that U.S. debt is good, amongst other things. And it's third proposed by a woman named Stephanie Kelton. And whatever, if that's your cup of tea, by all means, go watch it. That clip you just heard, it sure is good that that man isn't in charge of anything really important. Except he is. That was Jared Bernstein. Who is Jared Bernstein? Well, let me give you a Wikipedia dumb man's entry, and boy, do I have a punchline for you if you're not aware. Jared Bernstein is an American economist. Throughout his career, he has taught at Howard University, Columbia University, New York University. His areas of interest include federal, state, and international economic policies, specifically the middle class squeeze, income inequality, and mobility. Trends in employment and earnings, low-wage labor markets, poverty, and international comparisons. He's authored books, which include Altogether Now, Common Sense for a Fair Economy, and Crunch, Why Do I Feel So Squeezed? Another unsolved economic mystery. He's co-authored at least 9 editions of The State of Working America, an ongoing analysis published since 1988, by the Economic Policy Institute. A little about his educational background, he does not have a degree in economics. Bernstein has stated he grew up in a musical family and has aspired to be a professional musician as a young person. Bernstein graduated with a bachelor's degree in music from the Manhattan School of Music, where he studied double bass. Is the double guitars like other guitars? With Arnold O'Brien. Throughout the 80s, Jared was a mainstay on the jazz scene in New York City. He's also earned a Master of Social Work from Hunter College, as well as DSW in Social Welfare from Columbia University School of Social Work. We know what that degree is worth these days. At Columbia, his dissertation advisor was Erwin Garfinkel. He is of Jewish descent. Oh, yeah. He just also happens to be the chair of the United States Council of Economic Advisors. He is a senior fellow at the Center of Budget and Policy Priorities, and from 2009 to 2011, Bernstein was the chief economist and economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden in the Obama administration. In February of 2023, President Joe Biden nominated Bernstein to serve as the chair of the Economic Council of Advisors. He was confirmed to be chair on June 13, 2023, and was ceremoniously sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris. That's right. Biden's lead chair economic advisor says we will never go bankrupt because the government can literally just print money and has no idea why it needs to borrow from itself. This is fine. All of this is fine. It's it's May 3rd. Subber correction. I think I said yesterday that it was April 2nd. Thanks, Pops. It was, of course, May 2nd. Today is May 3rd. And again, a reminder, I will be hosting a founding members for on Substack happy hour later this afternoon, I think 6 p.m. Eastern. So founders have already gotten the link for all of that. So the rest of you, I'm sorry, are left out. I did, though, put out a general AMA for this episode today. I have one thing that I'm going to get away from on college occupations that we're seeing. And I want to show you how networks like CNN spin actual breaking news that, say, conservative outlets break themselves. One of the biggest complaints you hear from people like Brian Stelter and others is that, and Ben Smith of Semaphore, is, hey, conservative news outlets just don't break news. All of it's just bitching and all of it's just commentary. And they should really think about doing more hard reporting. Well, as we've seen with Aaron Siberian at the Free Beacon, who revealed several instances of plagiarism by several college administrators, that doesn't get picked up, does it? It just becomes something they ignore, and then the right-wing or right-wing news outlets like Free Beacon or National Review or whatever, they just report on it, or the Federalist. They report on it, they report on it, they report on it, and then mainstream outlets ignore it and then say, oh, this is just because Republicans are pouncing. It's just a right-wing thing. It's one of their classic textbooks where textbook strategies when news comes out about a Democrat or a politician that they try to defend, they just simply ignore it. They don't pick up the reporting like we saw with Claudine Gay at Harvard. If it's a progressive news outlet, like, say, ProPublica, who's doing a random smear hit con job on Clarence Thomas, you do see the rest of them pick it up. You will see CNN parrot it. You will see the Washington Post or the New York Times then pick up that reporting and not uncover anything that is malicious or illegal, just the insinuation, it looks corrupt and compromised. So, of course, they can try to sway public opinion on the only part of the federal government that Joe Biden or the Democrats don't really control. You can say the House, but come on. This is a pretty clear-cut example of an actual kind of a blockbuster news exclusive that Daily Signal uncovered. And then I'm going to tell you how CNN and other news outlets decided to report this story. The head of the Civil Rights Division of the Biden White House, the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, is a woman named Kristen Clark, and she's had her own kind of fun, shady dealings. She's also someone who backed up the Juicy Smollett story and then criticized the Chicago cops for demanding his cell phone data. And Joe Biden and Merrick Garland thought, this woman's just ripe for a promotion. Well, she testified under oath during her confirmation hearings that she had never, ever once been convicted of any sort of violent crime. That turns out to be false. Per the Daily Signal, Mary Margaret Olihan, exclusive, DOJ's Kristen Clark testified she was never even arrested. Court records and text messages indicate that she was. First at the Daily Signal, before becoming one of the Justice Department's top leaders, Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark was allegedly involved in a violent domestic dispute according to court documents, records, and text messages, an incident that ended in her arrest and was ultimately expunged. Huh, how fortunate. During her Senate confirmation, Clark specifically denied ever having been arrested for or accused of committing a violent crime. Clark was nominated by President-elect Joe Biden on January 7, 2021, and later confirmed by the U.S. Senate in May of 2021, and led to the Department of Justice's crown jewel as former Attorney General Eric Holder described the Civil Rights Division. During her confirmation, Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican of Arkansas, asked then-nominee Clark, quote, since becoming a legal adult, have you ever been arrested for or accused of committing a nonviolent crime against any person? No, she responded. according to responses she submitted under oath to questions for the record from U.S. senators. Clark's ex-husband, Reginald Avery, alleged to the American Accountability Foundation's Tom Jones in 2021 that Clark attacked him with a knife, deeply slicing his finger to the bone on the night of July 4, 2006, while they were married and living in Maryland. According to messages and documents reviewed by the Daily Signal, police arrested Clark that night. She did not respond to requests for comments for this story. Court records obtained by the Daily Signal, and I'm reading most of this because you're then going to see how CNN later documented this exact same story. Court records obtained by the Daily Signal show that a criminal case against Clark was initiated in the District Court of Maryland for Prince George's County, but on October 17, 2006, the Maryland State Attorney entered a request of nolle prosequi in the case, which effectively dismissed the charge without trial, nulled prosecution. Approximately a year and a half later, Clark sought an order for expungement of police and court records in the same case. Court records show that Avery and Clark finalized their contentious divorce in 2009. Clark had served as a trial attorney for the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division until April of 2006, several months before the incident. When the July 4, 2006 incident occurred, Clark was leading the left-wing National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, Legal Defenses Fund, voting and election efforts. There's much more to this. This is a pretty extensive report with screenshots of documents, as well as the questionnaire that Clark would have had to have filled out during her nomination process, which is all a federal document and under oath. And so she lied to Tom Cotton and said, no, I've never been arrested for any kind of violent crime whatsoever. She, in fact, was arrested during a domestic dispute. We can talk about who was at fault in all of this, whatever. Domestic disputes happen all the time. But the simple fact is that she pulled a knife and cut her boyfriend, husband, whatever's finger, and threatened him with a knife. She then went to jail that night. Of course, because the arrest was expunged from her record, she thought, hey, I don't have to disclose this. So she's lied under oath. She lied about the arrest. She lied about the assault. And again, she's the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Biden Department of Justice. There are calls for her to resign. I think the New York Post had an op-ed calling from the board calling on her resignation over this. And I will link to this original report. It's really extensive. This is really good work. This isn't one of these kind of three-paragraph online blog published hit pieces. She has a document. She has the screenshots. I probably have not even gone into half of the story that she documents of the night of the incident, as well as other things. I'm just putting it out there to show you what the Daily Signal broke, the news they broke, and the reporting that they did. I don't read Daily Signal. I don't particularly care or know what its politics are. I think it's right-wing conservative. I don't know if it's pro-Trump or anti-Trump or pro-Tucker Carlson. Or not. I don't know and I don't care. The reporting here is accurate and it's extensive. And that's all that should matter. Kristen Clark is a very powerful individual within the Department of Justice. She heads up civil rights crimes and charges, which of course we know are a big thing with this Department of Justice, DEI, equity, and so forth. So they reached out for Kristen Clark to comment on this, and she didn't. And what clearly happened is then she went to CNN, and CNN told her version of the story as a breaking news event. You've been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media podcast on Substack, and as usual, Don't ever talk to journalists.